And right now we talk to Peter Allam. And today's Legal Eagle topic is all about different types of businesses. Peter, very good morning and welcome.
Yes, morning, Wayne. Morning to all our listeners out there. Lovely day again. Great weekend of rain and now sunshine again because we're all back at work, I suppose, anyway.
Yeah, the weather knows how to do it.
Yeah. Today's chat is about the business enterprises to be found in South Africa. So let's start, because I know somebody's going to say, oh, you forgot about closed corporations. Let's start by saying that there are still closed corporations around. They are still allowed. They are supposed to convert to the small company, which a lot of people haven't done, but they don't seem to be strict on that. So if you do have a CC, you still can operate out of that. But the types of business that you have are as follows. You either have a sole proprietorship. A sole proprietorship is where you are the owner of the business, the only owner. It's operated by one person with no distinction between the owner and the business. In other words, whatever you do, whatever the business does, is all in one. So the debts you incur belong to you. You cannot avoid liability. You can't say, oh, I trade as Joe Soap and Joe Soap incurred the debt. You as the individual are the person that is responsible. So setting up a sole proprietorship is simple. There are a few legal requirements in different ones, but you have complete control and over the business and can make the decisions quickly and immediately. You don't need to go back and check anything. Whatever you do is done. So it has a low startup cost. It's the simplest one, no money involved. You're taxed as an individual, not as a company, so you can take advantage of tax deductions. And then, of course, there are a lot of credits for sole proprietors as well that are available. So it has some of disadvantages. The main disadvantage being that unlimited personal liability for debts and the obligations of the business. Sometimes it's also very difficult to raise capital in a sole proprietorship because you don't have any assets other than your own assets that form part and parcel of the business. So the advantages, if we just summarize that again, ease of formation, low operating costs, control over the business. And then, like I mentioned, disadvantages are regarded as limited access to capital, limited ability to transfer ownership of the business to someone, and, of course, the liability of the debt. So that's basically the sole proprietor. That's one man, one business controlled by the sole owner. You then come to the second one, which is a partnership. Now, a partnership is similar to sole proprietorship, except that it's owned by two or more individuals. In a partnership, the partners now all of a sudden share the profits and losses. They need to make joint decisions, majority rules there. You need to go to an attorney to get a proper partnership agreement drawn between you so that there's no doubt as to what the position is. You share knowledge, you share skills. It's got greater flexibility because there are more of you that can do and make decisions together. Makes better decision-making, some people say, although, sole proprietors sometimes are the best things as well. You can divide your responsibilities. So, and then, of course, tax partnership benefits are there as well, passed through the partners and is taxed on an individual level, which has a huge tax saving as well, because you're not going to pay, company tax and that as well, over and above your own personal tax. So, they're jointly and severally liable. Each partner is responsible. It's not a case of, that Peter incurred this debt, so he must be responsible, and Wayne incurred that debt, so it's his debt. Those debts are joint and several. One person does. He pulls in the other person as well with that. So, with your partnership, your advantages, I suppose you can say down that you've got somebody to help you share control of the business. You can pool resources, in other words. And, of course, it definitely has that tax benefit. Disadvantages, your partners can make decisions that are detrimental to you. Disputes arise among partners, and then it's a hell of a hassle to try and sort that out when that happens. And then, of course, you know, like I said, the joint and several liability of the debts. So it's there. That's basically your partnership. That's the two individual one. That's what you get over there. You then move on to the company. So you get a public company and you get a private company. Those are the two different types of companies. The private company is a legal entity. It's separate from the owners. So it's an entity of its own. It's an enterprise. It's owned by one or more individuals. You can be the sole owner, sole member of the private company. The liability is limited to the amount of capital you have invested in the business. And it's incorporated in terms of the Companies Act. So you've got to register it with the Companies and Intellectual Property Commission, CIPAC, as they call it. Your advantages, limited liability for the owners. You're not responsible for everything unless you've signed suretyship. Your ability, surety. If you signed a suretyship, then you'll become liable for any debts incurred. The other advantage is that your ability to raise capital is normally a lot better. You know, you can sell shares to raise capital. You can get bank loans a lot more easier and that type of thing with a private company compared to your individual one. The other part is separation of ownership and management. You know, you have your shareholders that own the shares in the company, and then you have the directors which manage the company. You can separate this ownership and management, although in most instances you find that the shareholders and directors are more or less the same people, but it can be separated. It's a separate legal entity, which means that whatever it enters into in contracts and assets is owned by that company and not by the individual members who have shares or form part of it. So your disadvantages there with a private company really is that your need for formal government structures is there. So, you know, you can't just do what you want to do. You've got to act in accordance with the documentation applicable in that regard. There are legal and regulatory requirements that must be followed as well. So different to a private individual sole proprietor or partnership where you can do what you want to do. A private company is completely separate. It's actually the private company, I think, is the one that's subject to more regulations and compliance requirements than any other form of business. You know, it's very strict in that regard. Right. And that's because it's regarded as a separate judicial person and you know, does its own thing. The next lot that you have then is a public company. You know, that's publicly owned with unlimited number of shareholders, larger number of regulatory requirements always, your access to capital, your liquidity, your visibility, legal recognition is all there in the eyes of the public. It's a separate legal entity which you can enter into contract and own its own, you know, assets and things like that. They are subject, like I said, also strictly subject to regulations and compliance requirements. But it has a potential, I suppose, for a greater return for shareholders. You know, they can get on stock exchange and things like that. So it's a hell of a nice way of forming a business with great, great advantages. So your public company, it can raise large amounts, it can expand its operations through mergers and things like that. Every day of them doing that. The disadvantage, of course, is just that you there's a disclosure of finances, strict disclosure. Information to the public is necessary. And there are extensive legal and regulatory requirements with the company as well. So you've got that. Then, of course, you've got, like I'm sure our radio is, a non-profit company.
Yes.
You know, that's a type of business that is established for public benefit or other non-profit purposes, and it has a restriction on the distribution of profit. It has tax exemptions. It has the ability to apply for grants. It can focus on social impact, achieving and addressing societal issues. It has legal recognition, which is separate. Donations can be deducted from a tax point. So your non-profit companies are there to really serve the public interest and help them to gain the support and trust of the public. There's a lot of people do it for a specific charity and that type of thing, or to make sure that you service like a children's home or something that. They're there and they've got their do's and don'ts attached to them. So it's very, very interesting. So you've got your non-profit. And then, of course, the last thing that they put into the package when you talk about business enterprise in South Africa, of course, is the franchise.
Okay.
That's a business that allows an individual or an entity to operate using a trademark and the services of an existing business. So, you get, not for using the name of somebody like a Kentucky Fried Chicken or Nando's or something like that in that food trade, you buy that franchise, you buy into the franchise, and then you have an established brand and operating system. They have their holding companies. You normally form your own company there. You can buy it as an individual, as a sole proprietor, or as a partnership as well. Mm-hmm. But invariably, I think they force you to form your own business company. And the franchisor looks after you in the sense that for a small, if you not call it small because people moan, for a monetary return monthly, you have the right to use its intellectual property, the operating system, the brand, everything is set up. If you look at a Kentucky Fried Chicken, just using it as an example, all the branding is the same. Yes, all the menus are the same. All the staff are dressed in the same uniform. The marketing support is there for everybody. It doesn't advertise Kentucky Fried Chicken at Cove Rock or somewhere like that. It advertises it throughout the country. When you see it on TV, there's no, go to Kentucky Fried Chicken at East London, such and such an address. It does it for the whole
group
of the franchise holders, the whole group, the advantages are there. It's nice to be in an established business because your business does seem to come automatically. So I always say with a franchise, if you're in the right area, if it's the right product, you can do well with it.
Yeah.
That's your advantage there. You get marketing support. You get ongoing training. You get revamps every so many years. You can't just buy and say, oh, well, I'm happy now and I'm going to just continue like that. You've got rules and regulations in terms of the franchise agreement. Your disadvantages there with the franchise, in my eyes, that initial fee set up has got to be recovered.
Yes.
So you've got to look at that. And then, of course, the monthly charges, you've got to make sure that you're able to cover those monthly charges. So I always say it depends on what the franchise is, how well established it is, that you must have a proper look at that. You have limited control over your business. I know that those franchise holders buy bulk from XYZ and they get a kickback there. So you can't go to your local butcher to buy your hamburger patties. You've got to buy them through the franchise.
That's it.
Because the franchisor is getting a return on it. So you've got limited control there. You can't do your own thing. You can't introduce a special hamburger or a special type of chicken or something. That's it. You bought into the franchise and that's what you will produce only.
Right.
And then, of course, I always find that there are a number of disputes between franchisors and franchisees. You get people that want to do their own thing and they get the hell in because they can't because it's in terms of a franchise agreement. But you need to respect that. That's one of the things. You got to respect the fact that you've bought in and that you must abide by those rules and regulations. So, there are regulations, the Companies Act, the King Code of Governance. With NPCs, they have a binding memorandum of incorporation outlining the NPCs' objectives, activities, and governance structures. So all of these different businesses are controlled by rules and regulations which are strict. So in closing, you know, we need to say you need to make sure that your legal compliance is in a line with what you were expecting.
Yes.
So make a thorough check on what you're going to let yourself into. Liability, very important that you ascertain what your liability is going to be in a business. As I mentioned, the sole proprietor and the company are individual liabilities. The other ones depends on what you sign, as suretyships and the like. Your tax implications differ and change. You know, you've got capital gains tax and company tax and all the different taxes that come through. So make sure that you check what the tax position is. Raising capital, your assets in the business and that are taken into account. So you may have difficulty in raising capital in certain circumstances, not always. Selling and transferring ownership, I suppose, comes into it as well, Wayne, in the sense that sometimes it's difficult to transfer ownership. You might have a couple of partners or shareholders with you, some want to sell, some don't want to sell. So that's where you need to make sure that you have proper agreements in place to ascertain what the position is. You know, you get a situation where you have members and 80% are happy and that 20% are unhappy, but they can't just sell.
Yes.
You know, you can't just say, okay, I've had enough, now I'm going to sell my shares. They normally have a buyback clause. In other words, you've got to offer it to the other members before you sell it. And how often haven't I seen people fight over just that, where I don't like my partners anymore. I don't like my other shareholders. I'm not going to sell to them. I want to sell to the public. Or you find that the remaining members want to pay a lot cheaper price for the shares. You can maybe get them, but the agreements normally say you're forced to put them back on sale to your own members before anywhere else.
Right.
You know, your separation of business and personal finances as well can come into the picture. And depending on what type of business you are, you know, you attract investors in a different way. So my advice to everybody in businesses is make sure that when you go into business, you're satisfied that you're in the right business and that you have the support of the people that you're gaining to. I always say it's extremely difficult and sad when people do a little cheap pub talk or meet at a bar on a weekend and they decide, let's go into business together.
Yeah.
You look again on the Monday, Tuesday, they've up and got a business running. Come Friday, they're already fighting with each other, but they put all the money into a business. That's always so sad as well.
You've got to be very, very careful. And Peter, just listening to all the different types of structures that you mentioned, would I be correct in saying that each structure is kind of tailor-made for a specific type of business and also a specific size of business? Like you wouldn't go and start a public company if it was you, the electrician. But if you were setting up a gold mining concern, for instance, there you would probably structure that as a public company.
Absolutely. You know what I always say to people? Once again, I always say, spend that little bit of money, go and see an attorney, sit down with him and let him play devil's advocate with you.
Uh-huh.
You know, I take pride in saying that I do that to a number of people. I have people phone me and say, I'm forming a business. And I say, whoa, put the handbrake on. Come and talk to me. Let me discuss it with you and tell you the different types of business. Let me hear who you're going into business with. You know, especially when you get somebody phones excited, I've just landed the franchise for XYZ.
Yeah.
Nobody's got it in East London. you know,
there might be a reason why.
Well, that's the whole thing. You know, sometimes you find that it's not a viable business to bring into East London. You know, you need to do your marketing check on it and that type of thing. So spend that little bit of money, go see an attorney. Let him play devil's advocate with you, give you the negatives. You know, I enjoy doing that. People come in here and I say, I'm going to be negative with you to make sure that you're understanding what you're letting yourself into. from a business point of view.
Right.
I mean, you get people that have been working in an establishment for 30, 40 years, and all of a sudden they see a gap in their trade and they want to throw the towel in, pull their pension out, and form their own business. And, you know, so often I find that that just fails because they don't realize that, you know, they don't have the know-how. I mean, you find somebody that's maybe an electrician, brilliant at his job, but not able to run the finance part of it.
Mm.
And he doesn't have the support that he needs in that regard. So you've got to be extremely cautious when you enter into a business.
Right.
You know, it's there. And I always say, beware. Entering into a business is not a straightforward, easy thing. You know, you get a lot of people that say, I'm tired of working for that company now. I'm just going to break loose. You know, I'm qualified as a plumber or an electrician or a whatever, and I can just do my own thing, one job a day, and I'm happy.
Yes.
Not as easy as that. If the jobs don't come, you're in trouble. You know, no longer is your tax deductions there and covered. So you can't go do a job for 200 Rand and think you've earned 200 Rand for yourself. You've got to put away for tax and all that type of thing and purchases and that type of thing. A lot of people as well, how often don't I find people that come here, oh, we started a business, but we don't have any money to buy stock, you know. So that's why I say go to the training to get going. You know, your setup costs and all that. Starting a business has so much to take into account. You know, your finance, the people you're going into partnership or into the company with, you know, advertising, purchase of stock, staff that you've got to employ, all that type of thing. A business has a hell of a list of things that have got to be considered when starting a business.
And
that's a subject of its own as well, that we must do, starting a business, the setup of a business. You know, we can do a chat on that,
And also, you know, just generally making sure that you are ready to go in because, you know, as you mentioned, a prime example, and unfortunately we're running out of time, but this might form part of advice for a future chat, is something that happened some years ago was when railways started closing down workshops and technical facilities here in East London. And a lot of people, as you mentioned, they pulled their pension out and thought, oh, well, I'm going to now do X, Y, and Z. And a lot of people did. And I've got a funny feeling that a lot of pensions went into the great black hole of debt before they knew it. So, yeah, it's very, very important to make sure that you've got your ducks in a row.
That's exactly what happened. Like I said to you, you know, you get electricians, you get, you know, all the members with trades, which people are so lucky with these days. I mean, you know, if you've got a trade, you should never be without an income. You should be able to use it. But don't take your whole pension and put it into something, a new venture, and then it doesn't
work.
You know, take off.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to have character and that type of thing as well. You might be the best electrician in the world, but you might go to a house and you're so grumpy, you know, that nobody wants to take you back.
Yes.
You know,
you need a bit of spark.
You need skills and spark, like you say. Absolutely. Anyway. Yeah.
But Peter, an interesting topic nonetheless, and looking forward to chatting more about it because it's something that we need in this country, and that is business. But if somebody wants to reach you at Alam's Attorneys, how do they go about it?
They can like us on Facebook. Just add a S to Alam, A-L-L-A-M-S, and they'll find all our details. They'll see all the weekly chats there with yourselves. And then, of course, we're situated at 6 Sansom Road in Vincent. Telephone 043-721-0118. So you can phone in and make an appointment to come and chat to us, and we'll help them with pleasure.
Great. Peter, thanks very, very much. Have a great week, and looking forward to chatting again next week.
Thanks, Wayne.
Thanks then. Cheerio. Peter Alam with today's Legal Eagle Chat. And don't forget, the chat will be on our website later today as well.